driven to right field. It's hit pretty good. That ball has a chance, and it's gone. An opposite field home run for Nicholas Castellanos. And we're tied up again. Here's the 3-2. Ground ball, base hit right field. One run scored. Here comes Upton in front of the plate. Not in time. Mata caught in a rundown, but he's going to drive in two. And look at Mikey. He likes it. A two-run single for Matuk, and the Tigers have grabbed the lead here in the ninth. They pop up back a second, and Kintler runs it down, and the losing streak finally comes to an end for the Tigers.
I mean, it's good to get the monkey off our back, for sure, but not a good road trip. Good game, not a good road trip.
Well, there's no pressure when you have a losing streak that a win kind of releases some of the pressure. It is just one game, and we've dug a little bit of a hole in this road trip, and we need to dig ourselves out of it a little bit.
Great, especially now with a long flight and a day off tomorrow. You know, to get this win was important. We're getting to that critical part of the season. You know, we all know it. We want to play well.
We're still trying to win games, and obviously, you know, he wasn't getting the job done. It was difficult because, obviously, you know, he's a long-tenured guy. He's had a long, good career. He tried everything. I know there was a lot of criticism to Brett, towards Brad and putting them in there, but quite frankly, what we're trying to do is get him better. It's either you release him or you just can't stay in the bench not doing anything, in the bullpen. So you got to try to work through it. It just didn't work out. I mean, he tried everything he could. We tried everything we could, and it just didn't work out. So, yeah, it was difficult to tell him, but at the same time, we're ready to move on and hopefully for, you know, bigger and better things.
I mean, I don't think this series we were disciplined enough. We were certainly able to get our hits, but we never strung anything together. This isn't last year. Last year has nothing to do with this year. When we play well, we usually give ourselves a pretty good chance to win. I think we played better baseball on the road. You know, I think it can be a little bit of human nature where you're trying to do too much and it kind of plays into their hand. We're pretty streaky. Well, 3 days ago, we were hot. That's why when somebody asks me, hey, do you think you turned a corner? I never say, because it's fluid and it's continuing. Now, we'll play again tomorrow, and we better be ready because Texas looks like they're really starting to swing it.
They're disappointing. We have a chance to kind of take a step forward and spread it out a little bit, and we didn't take advantage of that at all. They came in here and wanted a little bit more than we did, and they came out with three games.
It was a really fun series. I was confident that we would play well, but you're never sure how games can turn. It was just one of those things. We came in here, and I think all the games were tough. You know, to win three games, you got to feel good about it. You know, I think there are times when you pause and you enjoy the things that come your way throughout a season, and the guys should enjoy this, man. They play their butts off.
Let's not forget that sometimes what clubs will do is they'll promote a guy, even though he may not be worthy of it. And they'll even promote him another time just in case. Like, let's say Tebow somehow gets moved to Double A at some point. It's not necessarily, these scouts tell me, because he's earned it. It's more about these clubs saying, okay, look, he struggled at this level. Let's see if somehow we're missing something. And if we move him up and maybe against better competition, he shows us something. It's almost like they want to cross off their marks on their possibilities of this player to be sure that they're not missing something and that they can then say, okay, we can release a guy and not have to worry that we missed something. So the Mets might also be doing that right now.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza, and it does indeed commence now at 11 minutes after 3 on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, where we are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you had an outstanding weekend. I did. Had a phenomenal weekend, as a matter of fact. Didn't watch a ton of sports. I'm so glad I got out and was tied up with college visits for my daughter, tied to a trip through our nation's capital at a little bit of sightseeing in Washington, D.C. So I wasn't around to pay a whole lot of close attention to the indescribable, unimaginable, incomprehensible Cleveland Indians getting spanked around Progressive Field by the Minnesota Twinkies, scoring two runs in three games for crying out loud, after sweeping them up in their yard to take first place in the American League Central where they belong. You come back and give up first place to the same team because you can't play in your own yard? How ridiculous is that? I also didn't get to see any of the Tigers and their continuing crap, although they finally ended it. They ended the losing streak, that is, and got themselves a W. I heard a little bit there from Ausmus and Castellanos, but and Alavila as well on releasing K-Rod, and we'll get into some of that stuff. But I'll tell you what, Jim, baseball right now is just real, real confusing for the teams that we talk about and that we cover. You and I are both Cleveland fans. Obviously, a ton of our listeners are Tigers fans. Tigers are 7 games out of first place on June 26th. That's a bad place to be. But now they're not 7 games behind the Indians. They're 7 games behind the Minnesota Twins. That's not a good place for the Indians to be, a half game out of first place, when you have one of baseball's best records on the road at 24-15, and you have absolute garbage at home at 15-20. What in the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's really funky. I mean, I was sitting here with you Friday saying, well, something's got to give because the Twins are apparently so good on the road this year, and the Indians are not at home. And
vice versa.
Yeah.
Vice versa. Neither team can play at home. That's why I joked going into this one. How hilarious it would be. You know, I mean, if they were calling and saying, you know what, we'll come to your place. No. We'll come to your place. Nobody wants to play in their own building between those two teams.
I mean, here's what's amazing. The Twins and the Indians, because home records are home records, right? Twins and the Indians are the only American League teams right now with below 500 home records. Everybody else, even the A's are 22.
Even the last place teams, right?
Yes, even the A's are 22-17 in the mausoleum this year.
Indians and Twins have combined to go 31-45.
That's nuts.
In their own home building.
And that's your first and second place team in a division. That's nuts.
Yeah, it's really goofy.
I got another nuts stat. For me,
Jim, what bothers me, you know, you just heard Tito Francona talking about it in the aftermath of yesterday's loss, the third, you know, the sweep, the broom job. And he said, last year isn't this year. Well, everybody knows that, but it has to be pointed out. Last year, the Indians lost 28 games at home.
Mm-hmm.
They were tremendous, 28 games at home in the entire season. They've already lost 20, and we're not to the All-Star break yet.
Yeah.
That's a bad sign. And I know it's not last year, Terry Francona, but the question is why can't your guys play well in your own ballpark? What is it? Is it pressure? Is it the home fans? Is it too loud there? I don't think so. What the heck?
It's not going to be the loud.
Things that don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's not going to be the loud part because there hasn't been much to cheer about, though we haven't had to have the attendance discussion at all this year because it's been better. Yes, it has. But
that's kind of why I joked about it being too loud because they played so well at home last year. In front of, you know, empty seats, you know, and suddenly now they're getting all of the because they went to the World Series, yep. Blah, blah, blah. Ticket sales obviously way higher this year, so they're getting a bunch of people at the ball yard, and they just can't seem to perform in front of them.
Yeah, and I heard a funky stat. It really is one of those funky stats, but it almost explains a few things to me about the Indians' performances at home, which is, and this kind of lines up with one of Terry Francona's comments you just heard of, this is not last year. For whatever reason, at home this year, if they go down early, that's it. Done. I heard a weird stat on Saturday during the game, and I've updated it for the two losses since then. It's a real funky thing, but it kind of explains what I mean when I say for some reason at home this year, the Indians, if they go down early, that's it. 15-20 at home, right?
Right, correct.
If the Indians are losing at home after two innings, they are now 1-13.
Wow.
If they're winning after two innings at home, they're 9-1.
So they can pad their lead. They're good at padding their lead, but they cannot come back from a deficit.
Right, and it's such weird because it's only after two innings.
Yeah.
So and part of when you have a decent enough home record like they did last year, you know, part of that is getting the late inning kind of magic that good teams usually always have a few of over the course of the season. The numbers I just read to you, they haven't had diddly in that department all year. When they go down early, for whatever reason, that's just it. There's no real rhyme or reason for it, but it is what it is, apparently. It's very stark.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. Those are some really funky numbers, like as you say. We're going to talk about some of this coming up with our friend Dennis Maniloff. He will join us at about 3:35 to talk about what's going on with the Indians. Are they the team that started, you know, they came off a road trip 7-1?
Yep.
Which was including part of that was the four-game sweep up in Minnesota, but they look so good, and they kind of hit their stride. They're going to start to put some distance between themselves and the other pretenders in the Central. No offense to the Tigers, but they're one of the pretenders. You know, they were in last place as little as – are they still, Jimmy?
No, I was actually going to bring that up when we shifted part of this to the
Tigers. Oh, yeah,
they're
half game up now.
Yeah, because they won yesterday to end the skid. But going into yesterday, they weren't just holding the cellar in the American League Central. They had, for a few hours, the worst record in all of the American League. They were even worse than, by a half game than the A's going into yesterday's
game.
Now
they're second worst because only Chicago's at 432 in terms of winning percentage. So and the Tigers are at 440. So they are technically, they're still worse than the A's. It's just that the White Sox have fallen. But anyway, the rest of the pretenders, and yet, and now here they sit, you know, themselves, you know, not really kind of sure what they are and why they can't win at home. By the way, the 15-20 is bad, but it's not even as bad as Minnesota's, which is 16-25. I gave you the combined number, but just so you, in case you're wondering, 16-25. They're 9 games under 500 in their own ballpark.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty amazing
thing. Well, and then you combine those home and road records for the Indians and Twins, and suddenly the following doesn't sound that off. The Indians have won all 7 games played between the two teams in Target Field, right?
Yep.
This year.
Yep.
The Twins have won 5 of 6 in Cleveland. When you think about each team's home and road records, suddenly that makes a little sense.
Crazy.
Bad sense, but it makes sense.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that in the American League Central coming up with Maniloff in just a few. Again, the Tigers, you know, congratulations. Good for them. You know, they broke the losing streak, and that certainly is a positive thing. What was it? Was it 9, Jim?
It went to 8.
It was 8. Yeah, it was an 8-game streak, and we talked going into the weekend on Friday, you and I did, about, well, if it's, you know, if there's a chance to get healthy, it's now, it's the Padres. You know, it is the Padres who are, quite frankly, terrible. The pathetic Padres are coming. You got an opportunity to chop them down, and sure enough, not so much. The Padres win the first two. If they'd have swept out in San Diego, if they'd have swept the Tigers out there, I mean, again, you know, I asked you on Friday.
Yeah.
If Osmus survives the All-Star break, I wonder if he survives the trip out to the West Coast, you know, after Seattle and San Diego. If you get swept in all of those games out West, I just wonder if he survives the trip, for crying out loud.
So they staved that off
at least for now.
Yeah, they did, and that was a partial legitimate fear as the weekend was going on.
Yeah.
I was subbing in for Mike Miller on his show back on Friday. I was talking with the Tigers guy, and he said, you know, he said exactly what you just said. If they somehow got swept by San Diego, it would not surprise me to hear us talking Monday or Tuesday about Brad Ausmus being fired.
Yeah, about a very awkward plane ride home.
Yep.
Because there might be a former manager on board, or they might have told him to catch another flight because you're not with the team anymore.
Now, one piece of news, by the way, on the Tigers, you were talking about health. They will get Victor Martinez back in a couple of days. He's slated, according to reports, that he'll be back in the lineup coming up Wednesday with that irregular heartbeat thing that's now kept him out for over a week. So that's good news. We obviously wish him well.
Obviously. And now... You know, you talk about surviving that road trip, as I mentioned, and Ausmus survived the road trip, but barely. How big is the homestand coming up now for Detroit? This is a time when they really can't be messing around. They've got to put some wins together, and they got to do it relatively quickly in this homestand.
And it's going to be hard to do. They obviously have today off because of the, you know, travel day back from the West Coast. Then it's Kansas City in, and then it's the Indians
who have been hot.
Although for what it's worth, the Tigers in their couple series already earlier this year played better because we obviously knew it wasn't going to be any 15-4 or whatever the heck it was last year.
Yeah.
And then after the 4 games this weekend.
No, I'm sorry. I'm talking about Kansas City, who had been hot.
Oh, well, you mean
Kansas City. Cleveland. Obviously,
sorry.
Cleveland's not hot anymore. They lost 3 in a row to Minnesota. I was talking about Kansas City, who had been hot.
Yeah, they're playing a little bit better. Who knows? It's the Indians at home, so apparently throw everything out the door. But then after that, they get the Giants,
who are terrible
and completely falling apart this particular season. So it's a 10-game homestand.
Yep.
And I got to say, opponents aside, if you're the Tigers and you have any legit hopes of not selling / hanging around in this thing, I got to say you got to somehow take 7 out of these 10. And I don't know if they can do it.
No. You're right. And no, I don't think they can. As I mentioned, the Royals have been hot. They've won 7 of their last 10. And then the Indians, bad news for the Tigers, they're playing them at home because the Indians only play well on the road, as we've discussed. So that's going to be a Comerica. And then San Diego, as you pointed out, comes in, and you ought to be, if you're going to win 7 out of 10, you pretty much have to take all 3 of those, I would say.
From the Giants starting on 4th of July, yeah.
Yeah, I really think that. And then, of course, you really want to get some of that done because then you got to go to Cleveland, and we'll see if they ever get themselves right at home right after that. So really the next 13 games, seven of them against the best team in the division, even though Minnesota's on top right now by a half game. But seven of the next 13 are against the Indians. And as mentioned, you know, Kansas City's playing much better. They're the third-place team, only 2.5 out. And then, of course, you've got San Francisco. So you better make some hay against San Francisco. You better tread some water against the Indians and maybe try to get a couple out of Kansas City in order to make that happen. So, okay, so there's a little bit of a baseball update as far as where we are now. There's another story, another baseball story I want to get into. I'm saving some of my NBA stuff, by the way, for the second hour. The NBA has their award show tonight, and I still cannot tell you how stupid I think this is. That it's now June 26th. When did the NBA's regular season end, Jim?
April 15th.
April 15th. So April 15th goes by. May 1st goes by. May 15th goes by. June 1st goes by. June 15th goes by. And now we're all the way to June 26th. In other words, two solid months later, after the regular season ended, here come the regular season awards. You know, long after
actually
the postseason.
Checked out, it was April 12th was the end. 15th was when the playoffs started.
Close enough. Fair enough. That's fine. I'll take that. But the point is, I just find this really, really silly. And I know they want to have their night and they want to have all the spotlight on them, but it's so far after the fact, it just doesn't work. At least for me, it does not work. Drake is hosting and it's going to have all the big stars. It's fine. But you know what? We've seen the ESPYs. We've seen gatherings of the stars all in one place before. I'm not impressed. I don't know. Are they going to be there in tuxes? Are they going to turn this into, you know, the awards ceremonies are going to turn into like a, you know, an Oscars? Is it a tux thing? Is it a black tie event, Jim? Do you know?
I don't know, I'm sure there'll be some snazzy suits in there somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way. We should already know who the MVP was. It's probably going to be Russell Westbrook. Shouldn't be, but it probably will be. And you know, then they're going to do the coach of the year, defensive player of the year, and all that other nonsense. The stuff we should be able to find out on a rotating basis, as they've always done, and we should have known the MVP and all of those a long time ago, because this celebrates the regular season. And what's going to really make it crappy, Jim, and this is why I heard some people talking about this today, and I don't want to dwell too much on this because I told you I have another baseball subject to get into. But what really is annoying to me is we have seen the playoffs come and go, and we have seen some of the stars of the regular season flame out in the playoffs. Now, even though we know that these are regular season awards, your mind can't erase what it saw during money time. And what I mean by that is, yes, Russell Westbrook had a phenomenal season, averaged a triple-double. He also washed out in the first round. And we watched him wash out. And we watched James Harden disappear in game seven of the second round against the Spurs. I mean, just some tremendously disappointing performances. And these are two of the three guys that are up for the MVP. Yes, we know this is based solely on regular season statistics and performances. But like I said, your mind can't erase what your eyes have told it. You know, your eyes have taken it in and absorbed it. Your brain has processed it. We've had talk shows discussing it, about Westbrook and his failure in the playoffs and so on and so forth. And now we're going to be asked to erase all of that from our mind's eye and our memories and say, boy, do you remember what a great regular season Russ had? Look at some of these highlights. Yeah, I know, but I saw those then, and I've seen a lot more in the last 2 months since then. And not impressed. I think they need to give these awards for the regular season out as close to the start of the playoffs as possible so that people do truly remember what the damned award was for. What it was earned, you know, how it was earned, how all of these awards were earned, rather than we've seen guys who are going to win all of these awards flame out in the playoffs, play poorly when the money is on the line, you know, when it's championship time, winning time, if you will, and now we're going to give them awards for stuff they did before that. I have a big problem with that. I find it, you know, just to make a goofy analogy off the top of my head, you know, if your son or daughter is in the school spelling bee and they won their class and they won their school spelling bee and then they went into the regional competition and we watched the regional contest and we watched them flame out in the first round, you know, and then 2 months later we're going to go back and give them the award. But yeah, but you did the school one really well. Even though, you know, you finished 79th out of 80 participants in the regional round because you got washed out on your first one, we still remember what you did in the school 2 months before that. Kind of. Sort of. Not really. That's how it feels. And I know that's a goofy analogy, but it's just weird to me that we watched with when the stakes were higher, when performances were more important than ever from the stars. Some of the stars flamed, and we're supposed to forget that flame out and just say, but you were great in the regular season before the stakes got high. You were great in the regular season before the money was all in the middle of the table when we needed a big win.
I think
that bugs me.
And I think in addition to that, and I get that argument completely, don't get me wrong, I think the other factor here is because the NBA playoffs take so damn long that it doesn't, like, baseball announces it right after the World Series. But, of course, baseball being baseball, they get their whole playoffs in the entirety, that is, the month of October and a few days in November. So it's not as much of a gap between the end of the regular season and, you know, when they announce the awards right after the World Series. But for, you know, that was over 2 months ago when the NBA's regular season end. And I know they didn't used to do this. I know there was a time when MVP awards, for example, were given out in the conference during the conference semis or conference finals, because how many times in the past did you see there's the pregame ceremony of whoever's the MVP?
Right before a home game, so you accept the award in front of your 20,000 adoring home fans.
So that's the first thing the NBA
has
to do.
That's how it's got to be.
They got to push that part of the calendar back so that those regular season things, which is what the award is for, are a little fresher in our minds. Say, you know, May 10th or something instead of June 26th.
We're going to talk to Maniloff here in a moment about baseball, but I'm going to see what he thinks about that, too. D-Man and I always get into good arguments about the NBA. I think he might be with me on this one because it's just really annoying. So we're going to talk about that coming up. Hey, you know what I got? I got, speaking of baseball, and that's what we're going to talk to Dennis about, American League Central style. I got Mud Hens tickets, Mud Hens and the Clippers. Look at that, Tigers and Indians affiliates getting at one another on Saturday at 5:30. If you'd like to go, I got a pair of tickets with your name on. Be the eighth caller. How about eighth caller at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. You'll go see the Hens and the Clippers on Saturday at 5:30, courtesy of your friends at ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, back after this.
And Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
It is 3:37. We roll on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Congratulations to Steve North of Toledo. He's going to the Hens and Clippers, young Indians against young Mudheads at Fifth Third Field on Saturday. Boy, the Indians might use some of those Clippers bats because they didn't have any of their own in the three-game sweep at the hands of the Twins at Progressive Field. They never led in three games over the weekend. They were scoreless in 25 of the 27 innings over the weekend. They were outscored total 13-2. Their pitchers struck out 28 batters in three games, and they still lost all three. Those are from a tweet from a sports writer not named Dennis Maniloff, but Dennis Maniloff retweeted it, so I used it. D-Man writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group, Cleveland.com, covering the Indians, and talking AL Central with us now right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. D-Man, what's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? Good to be on. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah,
Better than the Indians, no doubt about that. D-Man, what? To what? Look, they lost 28 games in the entire season a year ago at home. Now they've lost 20 before the All-Star break, about a week and a half before the All-Star break, or whatever it actually is. I don't understand it, and I, you know, they played in front of an empty yard most of the year last year, and that was one of you know, my biggest complaints about what they had out there in Cleveland. Now they sold a bunch more tickets after the World Series appearance, so they got supportive fans out there, and they're 15-20 and wetting the bed when they're in their own beds. What the heck is going on with that?
I don't know, Bob. I mean, it's easy to point to certain individuals, I suppose, or, you know, some guys getting injured. Well, I mean, Brantley being out of the lineup and that type of deal, Salazar out, although I wouldn't count on Salazar from the Indians anymore. But, you know, you've got guys that are scuffling, Carlos Santana, Kipnis, Lindor. So you can point to that stuff. But honestly, even with guys slumping and guys out of the lineup, a weekend like this past one is the one that's mystifying. It's really hard to quantify when you're trying to answer the question, because You had an opponent that you just swept four times in their building the week before. You had perfect weather. You had, I believe, more than 90,000 combined in the three games attendance-wise. Everything was there for you. You were coming off of a 7-1 trip where a lot of us were saying, okay, finally the fits and starts of the Indians' 2017 season have ended. They're going to go on a run. They're going to take off. And that run started, we thought, on the road at Minnesota and Baltimore when they go 7-1.
Right.
So everything was lined up for them. And they were outscored 13-2 in three games against the Minnesota Twins and lost them all. So I'm baffled by it, quite honestly.
Terry Francona said in his comments after the sweep yesterday, he said, look, this isn't last year, it's a new year. He wasn't being, abrasive about it, but he's pointing out the obvious, that it's a different team and it's a different way to perform. But how different is it really, than last year? I mean, you can say it's a different year, certainly, but the team itself, you got guys back that you really needed back. You improved, of course, with Edwin Encarnacion, especially, who is now coming into, the guy that they expected and really has for the last month after that slow start. It really is largely the same team, and yet the home performance is what it is. You could point to a whole bunch of individuals that you pointed out, and you're right. But is it more than just individuals, D-Man? Is there a sense of, I don't know, some still call it maybe a hangover from the World Series last year? Is it a sense of kind of laissez-faire attitude, we'll pick it up come August and September? Or is there anything that's overarching beyond just the individual performances that kind of lead to the malaise that they seem to be in?
I think the easy answer earlier in the season was, the hangover from the extended season, which is an extra month of games, in the postseason, the playoffs. Teams have had that happen to them where it's tough for them to get going the next year. Their bodies haven't adjusted to the shortened off seasons. You look at the Cubs, you can point to them and say, oh, the same thing's happening with the Cubs. But I just think by now, that kind of an explanation or excuse is really rendered moot. I mean, you should have adjusted by now. Here we are almost at the midway point mathematically of the season. So, I don't think it's a malaise like that. I don't think it's a hangover. I don't think it's we think we're so much better than you that we can just walk out on the field and win.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of guys simply underperforming in certain areas. Where hitters are concerned, it's been runners in scoring position. For the most part, they haven't delivered. And you saw that in the Minnesota series. I mean, I'd much prefer to look at the Minnesota series and say the reason they didn't win is because they didn't hit with runners in scoring position, which is very true. I mean, I don't know what the number was. 1 for 25 or 27 or 2 for 27, something like that. Some ghastly bad number with runners in scoring position. I'd much rather look at that than say, well, they lost because they didn't take the Twins seriously. I mean, come on. That's just not the way it is in baseball, especially with this team. They take everybody seriously. They're not arrogant about the way they go about their business. They're confident, but they're not arrogant.
Dennis, let me add on that and give you two quotes, which I'm sure you already know. You're covering the team, for crying out loud, but they kind of talk to that or speak to that. I don't think they, quote, didn't take the Twins seriously. I agree with you on that front. But you did have Josh Tomlin say they wanted it a little bit more than we did after yesterday. And then you had Brian Dozier on the other side saying we really wanted to stick it to him. Now that the series is over, we can tell you we wanted to stick it to him and get back into first place where we belong. This is a Minnesota Twin saying we belong in first place. We're better, and we wanted to stick it to him. So it might not mean that the Indians didn't, quote, take them seriously, as you point out, but you got two different guys, one on each side, one saying how much we really wanted it, and the other one saying, yeah, they wanted it more than we did.
Yeah, but, who am I to quibble with Major League ball players, okay?
Well, I'm not asking you to quibble. I mean, you know what I'm saying, though, that there is, I don't know, I'm
right.
I certainly would never accuse them of just saying, we can walk on the field and beat these guys, especially after we swept them in their building last week. I would never say that. But I'm just saying that you do hear a couple of different types of comments like that. It makes you wonder, how much the motivation factor, I guess, plays into it.
those guys have played at the highest level. I've spoken with Tomlin a number of times. You know, he's a very bright guy. And, you know, but I would respectfully, and I'd say this to his face when I see him next time, I would disagree with him on the idea where they wanted it more. I mean, here's the thing, because here's what we know, Bob, and we've both talked to many, many, many major league ball players. It's not like other sports. Emotion, I mean, you can't charge into the batter's box all fired up, like, oh, I'm going to show you, you know, and then a 98-mile-an-hour fastball on the black, and you're so supercharged to hit it, you swing from the heels and you miss by a mile. Mm-hmm. I mean, emotion doesn't play a lot in Major League Baseball. It's more of a calculated thing. I mean, yes, you want to go out there and play hard. Don't confuse that with, but I'm saying you've got to go into the batter's box cold-blooded. You have to be measured. You have to figure out, okay, what is he trying to do to me, and how am I going to put the barrel on the ball? Likewise, pitcher. You know, the pitcher, he can be as fired up as he wants to be and as angry as he wants to be, but that could potentially translate to wildness and mislocation and home runs going out, and he's out of the game in three innings. So what good did his anger do, or his competitive juices do? If you channel them properly, then, of course, you're going to do well. If you have the talent to go with it. So I don't know. I just don't think that wanting it more is necessarily an explanation when it comes to baseball.
I think that's fair enough. We're talking to Dennis Baniloff covering Cleveland sports. He's talking about the Indians and the terrible weekend against the Minnesota Twins at home. They cannot seem to win at home. D-Man, I would like to introduce you to our man, Kush. Really good.
You know, and that home thing is the thing, guys, that's starting to really concern me. Now 15-20 at home. They and the Twins, incidentally, the only two teams in the entire American League under 500 at home. Even the Oakland A's are above 500 at the Mausoleum. And during Saturday's game, and I've adjusted these numbers to reflect Saturday's final and yesterday's, this is quirky, but it feels like it explains a few things to me. When the Indians are at home, losing after two innings, they're now 1-13. When they're winning at home after two innings, they're 9-1. There's something about this team at home this year that when they go down early, that's just it. It's not just this Twin series. That's been the case all year. What is up with these guys at home?
Yeah, that's a stat that Matt Underwood was talking about yesterday as well, Kush. If they're down early, they're in trouble at home. I guess you could point to some pressing aspects. I mean, these guys are human. Sometimes they want it so bad that it gets them out of their games and they get into the batter's box and want to hit the five-run home run or something to that effect, or the pitcher wants to strike out, two guys with one pitch. And I mean, you can overdo it because you're so eager to please. And it's possible these guys are so amped at home and maybe with the crowds. I mean, we've addressed stage fright before with the Indians over the years. The rare times when they were getting these huge crowds over the last, before Francona came in, when they weren't very good. Their records, when they had big crowds, were abysmal. They were even worse than their normal record. And we were saying it was because of stage fright, because when they finally saw a lot of people, they pressed. So, I mean, it's possible that by not getting off to a good start at home, they start to see that number and they go, okay, we're not good at home. And then 2 weeks becomes 4 weeks, and 4 weeks becomes 8 weeks. We're still not good at home. And you start to press. That is a possible explanation for it.
Dennis Baniloff.
But Kush, about how do you explain the Twins, as plucky and as gritty as they are, 23-9 on the road?
I can't. That's the weird. The Twins and Indians home
and worse than the Indians at home at their own building.
Those are the two quirkiest numbers to me right now going in the American League, that the Indians and Twins are very good on the road and are both terrible at home, yet those are the top two teams in the division. I'm really becoming at a loss as to why that is for each team, really.
How about this? Kush and Bob, let me throw one more at you. If it weren't for the Houston Astros the Cleveland Indians would be a 500 team. They're 39 and 35 overall. They're 5-1 against Houston.
That's pretty funny.
and all Houston is the best team in the American League. That's such a weird little dynamic. So that's a great one, D-Man. Dennis Mandeloff joining us out of Cleveland, talking about some of the things going on with the Indians. Who's the biggest threat? I mean, you know, Kansas City got hot there for a while. They won a bunch in a row, and they're only a couple and a half back. I think Detroit is fading. They're 7 back. The White Sox are trash. Are the Twins the real threat going into the summer and after the All-Star break? Does everybody else, particularly, you know, the Tigers, are they going to be sellers at the deadline and really conceding? Or do you think the Royals still have a run in them that the Indians will have to deal with? Or is it pretty much just Cleveland and Minnesota?
Well, I'll take it bit by bit. I mean, first of all, I'd say no to Chicago. I mean, they're going to be good in a few years, but not right now. They remind me a little bit of the Cubs when they were tearing down and rebuilding. But they're going to have prospects going bananas in a few years. So, but their ETA is not here yet. They'll sell off a couple pieces like Quintana. The Royals, I think, are a threat, yes. And I know that they have these, you know, big-name free agents that they were ready to sell if they were 10 games out. And guess what? They're not. So they have a decision to make. You know, they're a small to mid-market team that – can't sign all these guys and may not even be able to sign one of these guys. And so they have to make a decision. Do we ride it out with this crew this year? I think they owe it to their fans, the people who pay money to watch this team. I think they owe it to ride it out. If you're in contention, to me, it is sinful if you sell off. And so I would expect the Royals to stick it out with this group, even though they have pending free agents, and therefore they will contend. They will be there at the end. You're talking about the Tigers. You know me. I picked them to win the division. I thought they had the offense and the starting pitching to get it done. I've been proven wrong. I agree with you, Bob. I don't think the Tigers are going to be there. I think they'll sell off a few pieces if they can, even though they're expensive. They've been a huge disappointment to me. And I know I'm speaking to Tigers fans. I'm not doing this as like some Cleveland guy pointing my finger at the Tigers. I'm doing it as actually a guy who – you know, professionally is upset because my integrity, I said that the Tigers were going to be better than this. And they made me look bad, and I think they're a bunch of underachieving, overpaid, I don't know. But I'm disappointed to see the way the Tigers have played, so they're not in it. And that leaves the Twins and the Indians. Who am I to say the Twins are not legit after what I saw this weekend? Don't forget, a couple of years ago, it was just 2 years ago, that Molitor had them, 83 wins, if Kush can check it. They were in the low 80s. So, you know, this is not a team that was going from, you know, that had been horrendous for like 6 or 7 years in a row. And they have pieces. They're competitors. I think they'll hang. And they got a nice front of the rotation in Santana and Berrios. They got some pieces in the bullpen. They're scrappy and they're feeling good about themselves. If you can get to the All-Star break and you're in it, then you convince yourself, you know what, the rest of the season, why not? So I think the Twins will be there. I think it could come down to a Royals-Twins-Indians race.
All right, last thing, Dennis Mandeloff. We're going to get into some NBA talk next hour, so let me start that with a question for you. Multiple reports, obviously, I know you're following all of these things, the names Paul George, Kevin Love, now Carmelo Anthony, even mixed into this. The Indians were reportedly or rumored to be pursuing Paul George and somehow getting Carmelo Anthony out of New York to join LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. First of all, what do you make of the rumors? Are they just that, a bunch of silly talk? And second of all, if it is more than silly talk, how would that be possible? How would there be enough basketballs around for Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George, all of whom are used to taking shots whenever the living hell they want to?
I have no idea, Bob, how it would work. I have no idea what, if any, influence LeBron is having, if he's made any phone calls to whoever's in the front office.
Well, Wendy is reported. Are you aware of the reports I'm talking about, or am I catching you off guard? I apologize.
No, I'm aware of the reports. Okay. I'm just talking about, like,
Wendy has also thrown Dwayne Wade's into that too, saying that both Carmelo and Dwayne Wade are candidates to sign with the Cavaliers in free agency if they can secure buyouts from Chicago and New York. And then, of course, the Paul George thing. So that's how this whole thing came to be. It's very goofy, but go ahead, please respond.
Well, that's the very, that's the riddle, is can they secure the buyouts? I mean, I don't blame Dwayne Wade at all for opting in when it's mid-20s million compensation. So, I mean, I'm sure it's possible at some point that Wade could join the Cavs, because clearly he's not part of this rebuild that, the Bulls are engaging in. Same with Melo, I suppose. Clearly Jackson doesn't want anything to do with Melo.
No.
So I guess, but here's what I just can't figure out for me how, I don't know, let's put LeBron, Kyrie, Wade, and Carmelo together. How does that beat the Warriors? I don't see it. Okay. Maybe it does. Maybe that's what LeBron feels is necessary, but I don't see it. So, as much as I respect the talents of Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony, I don't think they are, either one or both, is a piece that's going to make the Warriors the least bit nervous if, in fact, they meet for the fourth straight time in the finals.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It would essentially be blowing up, what the Cavaliers have built, which is three straight finals teams. Because all of the other pieces around it to make it work would have to be gone. J.R. Smith would have to be gone. I don't know, Tristan. I just don't know how the stuff would work with the cap. But with all of those big names, and as I said before, the sharing of the basketball. These aren't guys who are used to doing what Kevin Love has so willingly accepted as a role. I'll wait in the corner for you to give it to me, and I'll shoot it when you want me to, and then I'll go crash the boards like a beast and get my own putbacks and do some damage down low. These are guys, who are ball dominant. They want it. They want to shoot it when they want to shoot it, except for LeBron, who's obviously an extraordinarily willing passer. But he's still going to want to get his shots up. He's not going to go from 25, 26 points a game to 17 to feed all these other guys. If the buyouts happened and the possibilities were there, would you be in favor of bringing in one or both of those guys? You would have to sacrifice so many of the other pieces, of course, to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm going to answer the answer to that is going to be for me yes, even though I just said that I don't think either one or both is going to make the Warriors nervous.
Right.
I'm answering yes because I want a different look to this team going into the fall, because I don't think you can reheat, repackage, and microwave what's here and expect them to beat the Warriors. So at least you're coming up with the element of change here. By adding one or both, potentially, you've presented a different look. And there's always that wild card out there. Maybe this different look is going to click and somehow they'll start to play defense together, or they'll be 4-5 on a string or whatever. So I'm in favor of changing the look. And here's the other reason I say yes, because I'm willing to satisfy LeBron in this case. I mean, the guy to me has done more than enough for this franchise. And if he wants to play with these guys, I think you make every effort to satisfy him, because the bottom line is, no matter what you think of LeBron, it's better off that he's here than if he's not, from the Cleveland perspective.
Right.
Even if you hold out and don't like LeBron, it's better to have him playing for the Cavaliers than playing for somebody else. So if these acquisitions were to make him happy, I'm all in favor of it.
The only thing I would add to that, I guess, is if I'm whoever is going to be the GM, or maybe I'm just Dan Gilbert, I would want to say, if we do this for you to make you happy, you are going to sign a long-term 4- or 5-year deal to finish your career here, right? Because if it's just for one more year and some of these signings happen and it blows up in their face and it doesn't work, and then he sees an opportunity to go with Paul George to join Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram with the Lakers, and he says, see ya, and leaves that mess behind, that's not going to be good for anybody, including his own reputation.
I hear you. I mean, that's a legitimate point you make, Bob, and you usually make legitimate points. But that's a very good one, because, if let's say that scenario were to play out and somehow Anthony and Wade did end up on the Cavs, mm-hmm. it didn't work out. Well, Anthony and Wade are not exactly youngsters, so you can't be talking about, well, you know, in a couple of years we'll have a nice chemistry going. No, that if it doesn't work this season, it's not going to work at all.
Completely.
And that's the case where, yeah, if you're Gilbert, you want to get that assurance from James, and I don't think James is going to give it to him, and that's where you get the, you know, you get the pull, the tug, and the back and forth.
Yep, I completely agree. Dennis Manilow breaking it down for us on the diamond and on the court as well. D-Man, thank you, my brother. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. Have a good one. Top of the hour, SportsCenter coming your way. Hey, Jimmy, we got more tickets, don't we?
Oh, yes, we do.
Let's do it again. I got another pair of tickets. Columbus Clippers at your Toledo Mud Hens at Fifth Third Field this Saturday. Caller number 6 this time. How about that? Caller 6. We'll give you a pair of tickets. 866-240-1065. Back with a lot more about tonight's NBA awards ceremony. Want to get your thoughts on that and how soon is too soon to be recruiting young football players. I have 3 stories that will blow your mind, and I want your opinions on them as well. 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket.
Driven to right field. It's hit pretty good. That ball has a chance, and it's gone. An opposite field home run for Nicholas Castellanos. And we're tied up again. Here's the 3-2. Ground ball, base hit right field. One run scored. Here comes up in front of the plate. Not in time. Matuk caught in a rundown, but he's going to drive in two. And look at Mikey. He likes it. A 2-run single for Matuk, and the Tigers have grabbed the lead here in the ninth. Pop up back a second, and Kittler runs it down, and the losing streak finally comes to an end for the Tigers.
I mean, it's good to get the monkey off our back for sure, but not a good road trip. Good game, not a good road trip.
Well, there's no pressure when you have a losing streak that a win kind of releases some of the pressure. It is just one game, and we've dug a little bit of a hole in this road trip, and we need to dig ourselves out of it a little bit.
Great, especially now with a long flight and a day off tomorrow. You know, to get this win was important. We're getting to that critical part of the season. You know, we all know it. We want to play well.
Still trying to win games, and obviously, you know, he wasn't getting the job done. It was difficult because obviously, you know, he's a long tenured guy. He's had a long good career. He tried everything. I know there was a lot of criticism towards Brad and putting him in there, but quite frankly, what we're trying to do is get him better. It's either you release him or you just can't stay in the bench not doing anything, the bullpen. So you got to try to work through it. It just didn't work out. I mean, he tried everything he could. We tried everything we could, and it just didn't work out. So yeah, it was difficult to tell him, but at the same time, we're ready to move on and hopefully for, you know, bigger and better things.
I mean, I don't think this series we were disciplined enough. We were certainly able to get our hits, but we never strung anything together. This isn't last year. Last year has nothing to do with this year. When we played well, we usually give ourselves a pretty good chance to win. I think we played better baseball on the road. You know, I think it can be a little bit of human nature where you're trying to do too much, then you kind of plays into their hand. We're pretty streaky. Well, 3 days ago, we were hot. That's why when somebody asks me, hey, do you think you turned a corner? I never say, because it's fluid and it's continuing. Now, we'll play again tomorrow, and we better be ready because Texas looks like they're really starting to swing it.
It's disappointing. We have a chance to kind of take a step forward and spread it out a little bit, and we didn't take advantage of that at all. They came in here and wanted a little bit more than we did, and they came out with 3 games.
It was a really fun series. I was confident that we would play well, but you're never sure how games can turn. It was just one of those things. We came in here, and I think all the games were tough. You know, to win 3 games, you got to feel good about it. You know, I think there are times when you pause and you enjoy the things that come your way throughout a season, and the guys should enjoy this, man. They played their butts off.
Let's not forget that sometimes what clubs will do is they'll promote a guy, even though he may not be worthy of it. And they'll even promote him another time just in case. Like, let's say Tebow somehow gets moved to Double-A at some point. It's not necessarily, these scouts tell me, because he's earned it. It's more about these clubs saying, okay, look, he struggled at this level. Let's see if somehow we're missing something. And if we move him up and maybe against better competition, he shows us something. It's almost like they want to cross off their marks on their possibilities of this player to be sure that they're not missing something and that they can then say, okay, we can release a guy and not have to worry that we missed something. So the Mets might also be doing that right now.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two is underway right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we remain Toledo's sports leader. Thanks for being with us. Congratulations, Jason Fruth or Fruth? What are we going with?
Fruth.
Fruth, of course. I should have known. Jason Fruth of Wauseon. Going to the Mud Hens Clippers game on Saturday. We got more tickets we'll be giving away as the week goes on, but that's a couple more for today. Okay. Hour number two, I want to do a couple of things. Number one, I want to give you the phone number again so you can be a part of the show at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. B, I want to talk about something that I did not see over the weekend, Jim, but I am absolutely looking forward to tonight. It's on FS1, and I saw a commercial for it, and I didn't realize it, that it was going to be televised. Did you know that this Big Three League is being televised?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. When I heard about the three-on-three, there's, first of all, two things. Number one, we talked about it on the show a week ago when they announced that three-on-three basketball is going to be a new Olympic event.
Right.
Starting in 2020, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, 2020 right. Games.
Which is just all kind of cool. I think it could be so much fun. And again, when you're talking about the younger players, the real prime of their career guys, like I said before, I don't know how they're going to pick Team USA. But can you imagine, you know, a Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and LeBron James, you know, threesome? Or I think it'll probably be four or five guys, then you sub in. Excuse me. That's usually how those things work. If you've ever been in a three-on-three tournament, and I have, you can usually have four guys, and then you sub one in. I don't know how they would do it and how they would pick the roster, but it's just all kind of awesome. I think it would be really, really fun, half-court three-on-three. Well, the other part is the Big Three League, which is an actual three-on-three league. Now, this one, unlike the way I just described, it is not filled with in-your-prime superstar players. It is former NBA players who are still active enough and athletic enough to play not full court but half court and still do their thing. And I talked about how cool I thought it was, and I'm still thinking it's kind of cool, and now it's even cooler because I'm going to watch it. I saw the commercial for it today, and I thought, yes! It's on tonight, like at 8 o'clock on FS1, and I set the DVR to record it. Not only it, but the series, because it's a 10-game season is what they have scheduled, and some of the names involved in it are just some of the best in the world, including Julius Erving and Allen Iverson. Now, Doctor isn't playing at his age. He is coaching one of the teams.
Right.
Iverson is kind of, well, let me share the story with you, because he's kind of a mixed bag here. But they started yesterday, and I didn't know it, or was it Saturday? Let me double-check this. I think it was yesterday. The season started, and it was televised. And Jason Williams, remember Jason Williams, White Chocolate?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, one of the flashy kind of guys who really never made a huge name for himself in the league. Well, correction. He had a huge name for himself. The nickname White Chocolate stuck forever.
Right.
So it was a huge name for himself. Never became a great player, was a really good player for a short period of time. But he's on one of these teams called the Three-Headed Monsters, and he's already down with a leg injury. He went down late in the game, and he's probably done. That's the danger of playing when you're talking about guys in their late 30s or early 40s in some of their cases, you know, that could be. It won't last very long. It's kind of the reason they stopped the Wide World of Sports, you know, one-on-one contest that they used to do with some of the older players way back in the late 1970s. But anyway, so here's the story. Basketball's newest league started with a winning basket and an injured former player. Rashard Lewis made a three-point play with his team facing game point on Sunday. This is how it works, just to throw this at you. Games are played to 60. You know, like in your backyard, you might play to 10, but
right.
That's
one.
Games are played to 60. With twos and threes, and this is the little X factor to make it more fun, they have a four-point shot. All right, so it's a real deep one. So games are to 60, got to win by two, just like you did when you were in your own backyard. And games are played to 60. And 60 wasn't enough in either of the first two games. So here's the story. Rashard Lewis made a three-point play with his team facing game point in the opening game of the Big Three. This league is co-founded by Ice Cube, if you were wondering. Jason Williams went down with a right leg injury late in the game, as I mentioned. His Three-Headed Monsters gave up the lead once he went out. They were 1 point from losing, but Lewis made his basket and free throw to edge the Ghost Ballers 62-60. Williams' injury shows the risk of players playing well past their prime, as he was one of two injuries to occur in the first two games. Corey Maggette, remember him?
Yeah.
had to come out of the second game. Both were expected to be okay long term. The game had gimmicks. I mentioned the 4-point play. Lewis had the first 4-point play, and teams had 14. So that's the other thing. There's a 14-second shot clock, which is kind of cool again because it's all half court. The team names included Threes Company, Killer Threes, and some players wore nicknames on their jersey, a la the XFL. You do remember Rod Smart, a.k.a. He Hate Me?
Yeah, of course.
Well, Jerome Williams, who's in the Big Three League, is going with Junkyard Dog on the back of his jersey. I would imagine, I don't know if White Chocolate was on the back of Jason Williams' jersey or not, like I said, because I missed the doggone first games, which bothered me. But anyway, Deshaun Stevenson also had a game-winning shot in the first day of action. They play them all in the same place, same day. They just go one after the other. The only thing that the 3-on-3 league couldn't deliver was Allen Iverson on the court. Allen was merely a spectator, and he plans to stay that way for the most part. League of former NBA players, first two games, side-winning shots. Iverson's team won the third game. He is a player coach, but he put himself in for only 9 minutes in the game. At 42 years of age, the former NBA MVP said he doesn't expect to be playing heavy minutes in this 10-game season. Quote, I signed up to be coach, player, and captain. Coach part is going to go on throughout the game. Playing part, not what you expect. He said you're not going to see the Allen Iverson of old out there. And at 42, we understand. You know, I mean, it is what it is. He was, when you're 6 feet tall, which Iverson was, you make your living against bigger players by being quicker,
right,
and faster than they are. And at 42, he's just not going to be. So he's going to be pretty much an outside shooter, I would imagine, and that's why he's going to limit his availability on the court. And he doesn't want the fans to be disappointed. That's why he said, this won't be what you expect. So don't come out here thinking you're expecting me to shake and bake and drive and finish inside the way I used to, because you're going to be disappointed. They want this league to be real. So it's held at the Barclays Center. They got 15,177 to come and watch this, which is, I don't know, probably about 11,000 more than an average WNBA game. So congratulations.
Sorry. Heck, it might be 5,000 more than any Nets game from last year, too.
That's true, too. They brought some stars out, entertainers. LL Cool J was there. James Harden was there to watch the first two games before Iverson took the court. He said, I think the best part about this game tonight and all the games is it was exciting throughout. It didn't need Allen Iverson, the player, per se. And he's probably right. It didn't. We were excited to be here in the first weekend of the Big Three, said Clyde Drexler, Hall of Famer, who was one of the coaches. Coached the Power to a 62-58 win over Dr. J's Tri-State team on Deshaun Stevenson's game-winning three. Let's see. Let me get a couple of other just names to drop on you here. The three-headed monsters blew the lead late, as mentioned, after Jason Williams went down. Oh, here's some names. This is what I wanted. I wanted to throw some names your way. Reggie Lewis was there. He was a part of it. Finished with 27 points. Former number one pick, Kwame Brown, played with the Monsters. Had 17 and 13 rebounds. Ricky Davis.
Wrong way. How about that?
Led the Ghost Ballers with 23 points for his team and 2 for the other team. No, I'm just kidding, of course. Because you can see him doing something.
Well, it's half court, so I'm pretty sure he didn't shoot at the wrong basket for this one.
No, but he probably didn't take it back behind the take-back line and maybe just put it up. Who knows what he is. Or maybe just intentionally missed a layup to grab his own board. He's done that before. It's just fun listening to the names. The Power beat Tri-State, as I mentioned, 62-58. Games are to 60. Stevenson had 20. Corey Maggette had 15. Catino Mobley was in that one, had 14. Jermaine O'Neal, former Pacers great. Yeah. Had 18 for Julius Erving's Tri-State team. Mike James had 13 points and 12 rebounds. Threes Company beat the Ball Hogs. Andre Owens, now that name does not ring a bell. Andre Owens had 20 and 15 for Iverson's Threes Company team. Dermar Johnson, you remember him.
Yeah.
He had 14. Al Thornton had 13. Iverson, by the way, if you're wondering, in his 9 minutes was 1-for-6 with 2 assists. Rasul Butler made 6 threes for the Ball Hogs. Derek Byers, a couple names here I don't know. And then the last one was the Trilogy beat the Killer Threes. They pounded them 60-45. Al Harrington, you remember him?
Yeah.
25 points. James White, 16. Reggie Evans had 18. And Steven Jackson, another name, not too, wasn't in the league, too terribly long ago, had 17 for the losers. I'm all in, man. I got to tell you. Now, there are a few names there that I don't know, and if they're on, I might kind of, you know, browse you know, the round of the channels. But to see Germano, I just think this whole thing, and maybe this is the old guy in me, and I'm trying to remember how it went. Like I said, back in the late 70s, it was kind of like part of the worldwide of sports on Saturday, long before ESPN and the big proliferation of all the sports networks that are on now. But, Jim, they had – well, first of all, they had horse. That was one thing they would have between, you know, star players, active players, I think. I don't even think they had necessarily just old ones. But they did horse, and they did something called the Superstars. You may or may not remember the Superstars. The Superstars was like one of the coolest things ever. They had stars from every different sport competing against one another in like a decathlon, 10 different decathlon events, but not traditional, you know, javelin, shot put, discus. I mean, some of those things were part of it, but you got to pick like your five best or six best events out of the 10, and then how you finished in them, you got points for them, and then there would be an overall champion every week in the Superstars. So you would have like a, you know, I remember Ron Say of the Dodgers, you know, was in there against, you know, Mark Gastineau of the New York Jets, and in there against, you know, a tennis star. I mean, they would all play against each other. It was
right.
It was just, I don't know. I mean, I can't say it any other way than just to say it was cool. It was just neat to see athletes from all different fields of competition competing against one another in a variety. I mean, one of the events out of the 10, Jim, was bowling. So it's not like they were all just grueling.
Yeah.
But there was biking. There was weightlifting, you know, benching. There was, I can't remember them all, but it was just part of the 70s pre-ESPN era sports packages. And they had something that was like one-on-one or two-on-two with NBA players or older NBA players that would go. And a couple of guys started getting hurt. And that's why they stopped it. It's also why they stopped the NBA old-timers game, or what do they call it during All-Star Weekend, the Legends game.
Yeah.
You know, because people were running the – now they were playing full court there, and hamstrings were being pulled, you know, quads.
Yeah.
And, you know, old injuries were resurfacing, and great players from yesteryear couldn't do it anymore. But these half-court games allow them to avoid having to run that much, and they just get to go back to the take-back line and turn around and go one-on-one or two-on-one and pick and roll or whatever. And I just think it's fun as hell, and I love some of the names on it. And this is just getting started, but in 2 years, if they make money on it and the ratings are good enough to get some sponsors, in 2 years you're going to see newly retired NBA players go right into it and have a blast. Dwayne Wade's 35. If he plays two more years, you know, and probably is going to be done probably after 37, I can't see him playing to 40. Yeah. I could see guys like that just rolling right in and saying, let's go, man. You know, Clyde the Glide, sign me up, put me on your team, let's get at it. And then you're going to have a bunch of really, really good players who can't quite run the floor anymore, but who can sure as hell play at the half-court game. And I think it's going to be highly entertaining, especially since they're giving them a little gimmickry with the four-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's having some star coaches and star power like those. I'm in, man, and I'm going to watch it tonight to find out. I hope everybody else does and reports back tomorrow on this program, because it's on tonight, I want to say 8 o'clock on FS1 on your cable provider.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this and is that the names of some of these guys, I mean, yeah, they all are retired, obviously, but, you know, you recognize a whole bunch of the names. That's the first key to this kind of thing, you know, taking off, that you have, you know, the somewhat star power, and you just ran, you know, through some of those names. And, yeah, we're not expecting, you know, Iverson, for example, at age 42 to be able to do those things, but it's going to take, you know, those kind of names and a startup like this, and There's a lot of potential here. And then again,
well, remember, that's the reason I brought up about the late 30s, like with guys retiring.
Yeah.
You know, Iverson's 42, but if they had started this 3 years ago or 4 years ago when he was 38, I bet he'd have played, and I bet he'd have been fantastic.
Right.
You know, still in game shape kind of things, and to have Iverson, old school Iverson, going up against old school, you know, White Chocolate, that kind of thing, both of them with as flash and fancy as they were. Again, you're not being asked to lead a team, direct an offense, you know, down the court, play defense on
right.
the other end, and, you know, navigate five guys. It's just be what you are, be what you be. And if you're a great one-on-one scorer, to see those kinds of matchups and, you know, at the half-court thing where you don't have to run and pull those muscles, I just I can't tell you how excited I am. I just like novelty sports, I suppose. I like the idea of these new things coming up.
No, and this is a novelty new thing that really, really has the potential, you know, to take off. And again, it's because of some of the names that are involved in this. Heck, you know.
It's in the Olympics.
Yeah, I was just getting to that part. This is going to be an Olympic thing here in a couple years. So the early stages of this league is like an interesting tryout, if you will, for some of the guys who maybe you might be interested in a couple years, you know, doing this Olympic style because it's there. And because you're talking retired players, for obvious reasons, it's a nice little, you know, history lesson, too, for some of you youngies. I mean, I was just scanning some of the rosters myself just now, and I love some of the coaches. You know, Clyde, Rick Barry, George Gervin is one of the coaches on this.
Allen Iverson.
Yeah, Dr. J. Allen Iverson. One of the coaches has old Piston bad boy Rick Mahorn coaching him, for goodness sake. I mean, it's so far in the early stages, it's kind of being done right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it has such potential to take off. And I'm very curious to see, you know, how this goes, too, because this could be the beginning of something that's very, very real as we keep going forward. And the kind of thing where guys who are about 40 and just left the league, it's like, hey, maybe I'll try my hand at the whole 3-on-3 thing going on.
Well, let me throw another possibility out there.
Okay.
What about guys that don't quite make the league? What about a guy who was a star in college, gets drafted in the second round, plays a year or two, isn't going to continue playing, he's just kind of a hanger-on? I'll give you an example. What about somebody like Darko Milicic back in the day? How long did he actually hang on after the Pistons screwed up in the worst way possible?
Oh, goodness. I have to double check, but it wasn't very long.
Once a guy like that fails at, say, 24, 25, maybe this isn't just an old-timers league, because it's not set. Doesn't say it's got to be old-timers. Doesn't say it has to be retirees after 10 or 15 years in the league. It's just Big Three. It's just the Big Three league. I'm wondering if you have guys who are maybe college stars but don't make the NBA, which there are plenty of. More than the other way around, certainly.
Okay, strangely, Darko somehow lasted for until 2012-13. He played one game with Boston that year. Is that
okay? That's well, you know, and that's
his, he was yeah, also 27 kind of when that happened.
But
so.
Guys like that, that's one possibility, and maybe Darko isn't the best example. I'm just trying to think of somebody who was like a star in college who it didn't pan out in the pros,
yeah.
Which happens so often. You know, what I mean, there's the a only chance thing of a guy like.
The only
there's a chance that a guy like Derek Williams, who was the number 2 pick in 2011 behind Kyrie Irving,
mm-hmm.
who has bounced around, obviously, and now is on the Cavs bench, and literally was about their 12th man because he never really got off of it in the postseason very much at all. If he doesn't make it for another year or two in the league, here's a guy who might be 26 years old or 25 years old, who's prime of his career athletically. He isn't going to play the NBA, but he might go hang around in the Big Three league, get bigger names. Guess what comes with it? Bigger sponsors.
Yep.
Get bigger sponsors and bigger ratings. Guess what comes with that? Bigger money.
And that's the key right there.
And you might entice some of these guys.
And that's that last part is the key right there if you're talking the younger type guys who didn't make it. Because, let's face it, most of the names you ran off as examples, those guys, they made their bank, okay?
Right.
They did.
These are career guys who already finished with their NBA careers, and you're right, they've got
precisely.
All the money
they want. For the younger example type guys, then the decision would be a little more dollar centric, which is, can I make more playing in this Big Three than I would say going and playing in one of those European or Chinese leagues?
Well, you're right. First of all, and some of those leagues pay big money, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, like I told you before, a guy like Jimmer Fredette. Jimmer Fredette is a superstar in China. I mean, he has like his own shoe there. He's like, his face is on lunch boxes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's some guys who can go over there and make big time money. But what about other guys? You know, forget about guys who didn't quite make it in the NBA. But what about guys who haven't had a chance yet? Let's say for the sake of discussion that the NBA and the NCAA work out this agreement that Coach K is really pushing for, which is to, first of all, have an NCAA basketball commissioner. But second of all, to institute a new rule that you can now go to high school, or excuse me, go to the NBA directly out of high school, or you can come to college, but if you come to college, you have to stay for a minimum of 2 years. And as you know, you have to be a student in good standing in order to be able to play.
Right.
What about the young star, the Kwame Brown, and that's what made me think of this, who's in it now that he's, you know, out of the NBA. But what if it's a guy like him, you know, who college isn't for me, but I can't see myself going for 2 years to college and having to go to classes and all that stuff. Remember the old Cardale Jones tweet?
Yes.
We ain't come here to play school. We came here to play
right.
football. And by the way, congrats to Cardale. He graduated
he did.
This past spring. So he, you know, completely, you know, blew away that old
right.
criticism. Good for him. But anyway, I can't see myself going to college, but I know I'm not ready for the NBA yet. You know what I could do, though? I can go play some 3-on-3, go to the Big 3 League, make some bucks for the 2 years that they won't let me in to the NBA because I'm not ready, and I haven't gone to it, but I got to wait my 2 years. Kind of like the NBA NFL where you have to wait 3 years mm-hmm. before you're graduating class. You don't have to be playing college ball, but you can't play NFL ball until 3 years after you're graduating class. So if it's a two-year wait, I just wonder if you might get some great high school players coming up and saying, I'd rather wait here and make a few bucks in the NBA than go to college where I would have to go to class, and I can't do that.
No, and that's an interesting point, and those will be the things that will kind of get answered as this thing keeps going forward, because if this inaugural season here this summer, and I kind of like, by the way, how they're doing it. It's a weekly thing until early or mid-August, I should say. I love how they're jumping around. Like the games were at the Barclays Center. The next round, they're going to Charlotte. I see Tulsa. The championship will be at the Sonics Old Arena in Seattle at the end of August. So they're jumping around as well. And the more it takes off, the more teams will end up in this kind of thing as it goes along. And being a once-a-week, one-game-a-week kind of thing, it's not too strenuous, especially on the older guys. So there's a lot of potential, you know, for this to take off. And then you factor in some of the things like you're talking about right there. And this is going to be very interesting to see how it goes forward. And from all I understand, it's a very, very good start to the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm just excited to watch it tonight. And, you know, here's the other question. And I literally don't know this. What we're doing in this last segment here is just riffing on this because it came to top of mind. Are they playing back-to-back nights?
No.
Because they played yesterday. Or is what they did yesterday being televised?
I think that's the case. I think what is being played yesterday is being televised.
Right, so it wasn't live.
Correct. Correct. That's, yeah, those scores you just read off, those will be the ones.
Well, then I apologize for you know, the...
Because I'm looking at their schedule. Week 2, Sunday, July 2nd, they're all at Charlotte. That's the next set of games.
Well, then I apologize for the spoilers. I just gave you the results and who scored what and everything else with their injuries. I didn't mean to do that. I was just... I'm legit excited about it. And when I saw the story today... ESPN.com, ESPN.com, about the results of the games. And then I also saw a different thing on FS1 on TV today that there's going to be on tonight. I did not put two and two together. So,
and that's another thing. If this picks up, those won't be tape delayed. They'll actually do it live.
We'll do it live. All right, 4:36. We'll get a quick timeout here. Sorry, little Bill O'Reilly. We'll get a by the way, our sports center here. I want to come back, get into a couple of things outside of the realm of the NBA and the basketball world. I want to talk about high school recruiting. I mean, middle school recruiting. I mean, elementary school level recruiting. It's not a joke. It's happening. Real coaches making real offers to little kids. And I mean,
be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling on 4:44, final segment of the Monday afternoon broadcast. Thanks for being with us. Okay, now... This is a little bit of deep stuff, okay? We have seen this kind of thing coming, and we have complained about it, but it's almost always just an isolated story. When you see a college coach, almost as a novelty act, I think, try to put his name and his program's name and his school's name out there to, you know, gain some attention. It's just like a novelty thing. Oh, there's a really, really great junior high kid. We're going to offer him a scholarship in junior high. Not even going to wait. I mean, it started, of course, well, a freshman quarterback. hadn't even thrown a pass for the varsity yet, but boy, he's really, really good. We're going to offer him a scholarship. And then another coach, well, we can do better than that. We're going to offer a scholarship to a junior high kid. And again, occasionally these kind of things happen, and they're just more or less novelties. But this is becoming much more than a novelty. It is becoming much more than an occasional event. It is becoming big business, and it is becoming a copycat situation, and it's becoming sick, quite frankly. It really is becoming sick. Let me share some of this with you here. I've got two different stories in front of me, and I want to try to kind of merge them to share the total story. In case you missed it, this is from the Charlotte Observer down in North Carolina. In case you missed it, there's been a trend of some college programs offering scholarships to kids at much younger ages than normal. Usually this happens at the later stages of high school, but not anymore. New Florida Atlantic coach Lane Kiffin, and we know how controversial this clown is, offered rising eighth grader Caden Martin, son of former Tennessee quarterback T. Martin, now the offensive coordinator at Southern Cal, offering rising eighth grader Caden Martin, who graduates in 22, a full scholarship. Kiffin has also offered a California quarterback who just finished sixth grade, a full scholarship as well, per Fox Sports reporter Bruce Feldman. FAU and Lane Kiffin offered a scholarship to QB guru Steve Clarkson's son, Pierce, a class of 2023 QB who literally just finished the sixth grade. But we're not done. The race to the bottom, if you will, literally to the bottom of the schools, has gotten even earlier. A nine-year-old in Los Angeles, Haven Finney Jr., recently received an offer from the University of Nevada. That news was reported by his personal trainer, a nine-year-old as personal trainer, Mike Evans, former Louisville football player. Another one of Evans' clients, a 10-year-old by the name of Bunchy Young, got an offer from Illinois earlier this month. Are you hearing these ages? And it's not just one nut job coach like Lane Kiffin at FAU. Nevada, Illinois. And now let's throw in, why the hell not, Hawaii. Hawaii has offered a full scholarship to a fifth grader, not junior high or middle school, fifth grader. Not only does Hawaii work their way into a headline for anything other involving football, when it does, the chances are the news is either going to be really good, really bad, or just bizarre. I think this one encompasses all of C and maybe a little bit of B, because I don't think this is good. Titan Lakaden, or Lakaden, I don't know, don't care, he's a little kid. Titan Lakaden is a quarterback who plays football in Hawaii, and he just received a D1 scholarship to go to the University of Hawaii. He's 11. He's in fifth grade, and he has a Twitter account. And his Twitter account included this tweet from back on June 11th. Blessed with a D1 offer. Thank you, Coach Rolo. At Nick Rolovich, coach at Hawaii, hashtag future, hashtag defend pride rock, hashtag UH warriors. This 11-year-old fifth grader is on his way to Hawaii. Now, we all know that these offers are non-binding. It's not like Kiffin or Illinois or Nevada or Hawaii has to follow through with this, obviously. But the fact that they just continue to go lower and lower and lower. You know, we're talking about, again, kids who are freshmen who have never even, you know, thrown a pass, caught a pass, made a tackle, juked a runner or a defender, I should say, or anything else on a varsity field. But we're projecting. We like their upside. Now we're out of the freshmen. We're down into to the middle schools. And now we're out of the middle schools. And we're down into the elementary schools. And we're at fifth grade. How long? Truly. Well, hold on, Jimmy. How old are you when you're in ninth grade? Or, I mean, not how old are you. What grade is that? That's about fourth, isn't it? Kindergarten, usually you start at kindergarten at five. Most kids do anyway.
Right.
Some of them start at six, which a lot of dads do for sports reasons, you know, to get their bigger. Oh, my kid's bigger when he's in kindergarten. They do that all the time, obviously. But if you're in fifth, if you're a five-year-old in kindergarten, sixth and first, seven in second, eight in third, nine. So you're in fourth grade. So the fifth grader I just highlighted is not the youngest one. The nine-year-old who's in fourth grade.
Jeez.
How long? I mean, geez. I coached fourth grade football. I had an idea who my studs were going to be when they get up into high school, when I got up into high school. But I also had kids who were the very same size as eighth graders as they were in fourth grade. They never grew. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what they're going to become. But these coaches are, and I don't know if they're legitimately trying to get their hooks into these guys on the expectation that 8 years from now, think about that. Fourth grader, 8 years from now, will be a senior. 8 years from now, we think you're going to be really good. And we want you to remember, we offered you first so that you come and play for us. Is it to try to get their hooks into the kid, or is it just to get what I'm doing right now? To get people on talk shows from one end of the country to the other, particularly on the national shows, to talk about their programs. Because, there is publicity, and, you know, there's an old adage, there's no such thing as bad publicity. If people are talking about you, that's a good thing, no matter what they're saying, especially if you're trying to market a product. And in this case, their product is their school. That's what I can't figure out exactly what it is that they're trying to do here.
I think it's a little of both from what you're saying, because, you know, as you're talking about this and listing some of these names and how long it would be before they're even college, you know what thought keeps popping into my head? Good chance that none of those coaches are still at that job when the kid actually is ready for college.
Oh, yeah, great point. Great point, especially some of the programs we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't coach 20 years at FAU.
Right.
You don't coach 20 years
in
Nevada.
I mean, I gotta tell you, Lane Kiffin at FAU, his goal in his own head has to be, if I could turn this program around and be good 4 years from now, I am totally out of here.
Well, I was going to say two.
Well, two, yeah, even more with him.
You take FAU and win 8 games, and then maybe next year win 9 games, get a decent bowl, you're taking another job. That's just, and of course, then he'd probably say, well, I want you to come with me. I want you, you know, now you're in seventh grade, 2 years later, now you're in seventh grade, will you come with me to the new school? The father of the kid in Hawaii said that the coach likes Titan and what he does. What does he do? He's 9. We both agreed that he's different. He carries himself differently. What does that mean? He's 9. They said they want to offer a scholarship and asked me how I felt about it. And I know what my older son went through in the recruiting process, and it's difficult, especially with us being in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So when opportunity knocks, you answer the door. What are you saying, Pops? That since your older son went through a battle in the recruiting process, your younger son won't go through that. He'll just sign now with Hawaii at age 9? Or was this the 10-year-old? I'm getting mixed up a little bit. No, seriously. Oh, no, this is the 11-year-old.
Okay.
Here's the 11. The 9-year-old was the one who was offered by Nevada, I believe it was.
Okay.
So anyway, well, so what are you saying? Because he's made up his mind now? He's going to the University of Hawaii. That's it? That's just it? No, because he carries himself differently. He's 11, and he carries himself differently. What the hell does he do that is so different, for crying out loud? He's 11 years old. You know what's going to happen here? Here's what's going to happen within the next 2 years, maybe 3. There's going to be a woman laying on her back in a maternity ward in a hospital someplace in America. And the doctor is going to be yelling, push, push, push. And then suddenly the operating room, I guess, you know, because
delivery room.
What do you call the maternity ward? There's going to be a knock on that door. Hey, it's Coach Sampson from NYU. I got rights to whatever comes out of you. If that's a boy, I'm offering him right now. All right. I've seen your son, your other son. I've seen your dad. They both have good, or his dad. They both have good builds. I got dibs on whatever pops out of you now. Deal, sign here.
All kidding aside right there, that hypothetical
ain't
would
far
not,
off.
Ain't, it's not far off because I part of me would not be surprised if, you know, because you mentioned, you know, I like what I see out of dad here. Yes, if dad is a pro in one of the sports.
Oh, yeah.
I can picture this. If it take it to its logical conclusion, I can picture that.
Well, that's why
sadly.
I think it's the I think it's the 9-year-old, right, who is the son of the QB guru, Steve Clarkson.
So that's kind of like the pro thing. I believe that's half the attention right there.
We know he's going to be really good because Steve Clarkson's his father. And he's a QB guru.
Other people.
Imagine how good he's going to be for his own kid. So his kid is probably going to be amazing. Well, like I said, we have a deal. Hey, congratulations. I heard your wife is pregnant with a baby. Let's talk business. I mean, it might even be before the delivery room. That's the word I was looking for, delivery room. I don't know why I couldn't think of it. Operating room, maternity ward. It might even be before that. Hell, hey, you're going to be a great coach to a kid someday. Let's talk about you knocking your wife up. Get her knocked up here in the next couple of months. That'll have her due for a November delivery, and that'll have this kid being a senior at this time at this year, and let's get the paperwork drawn up. I know it sounds stupid. It really does. But so does giving a 9-year-old a scholarship offer and a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old. And did I say 12? I mean, hell, that's old hat now. Eric in Toledo, here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I can't, like, argue against you. I think it's disgusting. It's terrible what these college coaches are, what lengths they'll go to try to get a leg up on competition. It's terrible. I played college lacrosse at a Division III school. I had to send my own tapes in. I had to contact my own coaches to even get them to look at me. And these kids are 9, 10, 11, 12. I'm not saying they're not gifted athletically.
Right.
But I was a senior in high school before I officially got looked at to play lacrosse. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and then that's how it is for most athletes, you know, if they're even potentially scholarship athletes. You have to impress, put together a real game tape at the high school level so that they can see how that translates potentially into the college level. And they're seeing these kids on peewee lots, one step away from touch football, and saying, well, that translates big time into a stud.
How many of those peewee kids are honestly going to be playing football at the high school level? Half of them will probably get into something else.
Yep, exactly. Once they realize, these little kids are little kids, and they do have attention spans of gnats, and they start becoming interested in something other than this, and then all of this is just, so much embarrassment. Hey, I got to run, Eric. The music is playing, brother. Thanks for the call, but I'm glad to hear somebody agree that this is ridiculous, and I'll be telling you something else, too. You know what else this is? In my opinion, it's borderline. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but it's borderline child abusive because it puts so much pressure on these little kids that they should not have to deal with in their young lives. That kind of pressure can almost be abusive. And you know what else? Every other kid who knows them is going to be like, Dad, how come I don't have a scholarship offer? I turn 10 next month. Where's mine? What do I have to do? And it just creates a lot of problems for a lot of young kids, and I don't like the idea. All right, that's it. All the time I got. Drive Time is coming up next. Mike Miller is out. Jim Cushman is in today for Mr. Miller. So stay where you are. He's got a great show planned for you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Bye-bye.